Today, answers matter more than ever before. That's why IBM is helping businesses manage customer questions with Watson Assistant. It's conversational AI designed to work for any industry. Let's put smart to work. Visit ibm.com/Watson Assistant.
We'll go till 9 o'clock tonight. Excited about the show. Bill Orme from The Athletic's going to come on at right around 7 o'clock. Kevin Schaefer from ESPN, NFL staff writer, will come on at 7:30, kind of give us an idea of how this whole virtual offseason is going to work for the NFL. And then, of course, we got the schedule. Hopefully, I feel like it's going to be leaked little by little by the time we get to 4:30 tomorrow. And I'm talking about the Rams schedule, the Raiders, the Los Angeles Chargers as well. So we'll talk a little bit about that. By the way, tomorrow, Kirk Morrison and I will do a special show in regards to that. But I do want to start off this show. There you go, Kirk in the house. But I want to start off the show talking a little bit of baseball. You heard actually Mason mention it. I was going to do this anyways. I was going to talk about Ken Rosenthal and his article that was in The Athletic. And I know we don't know what the exact plan is going to be for the Dodgers, what the exact plan is going to be for the Angels, and what the exact plan is going to be for Major League Baseball. But while we're doing crosstalk, Ireland starts mentioning that Jeff Passan had just sent out a tweet. We know Passan has dialed in as anybody when it comes to baseball. So I'm going to kind of go back and forth between both of these articles. Ken Rosenthal of The Athletic, there was this Cleveland Indians had a Zoom call, and it was a conversation between obviously a number of their front office staff, players, and so forth. And there was an estimated it was estimated that the season would begin after 3 weeks, kind of a ramp up, putting the start of spring training around June 10th. So this was just something that was being floated out there. They said it was on a Zoom conference call. These were from Cleveland Indians officials. Indians have their players mark in the sand Tuesday, July 1st for opening day. Okay, does that mean that this is in stone? Of course it's not. I mean, nothing going on right now in baseball is in stone. Nothing going on right now in sports is in stone. And frankly, nothing in the world right now going on is in stone. Everybody kind of takes these things day by day. So Jeff Passan put out just a few minutes ago, probably within the last half hour, MLB return to play proposal expected within a week, sources say. So Major League Baseball expects to offer a return to play proposal to the MLB Players Association within a week as teams have begun to encourage players to prepare for a spring training that could begin in mid-June and a season that would start in early July, sources familiar with the discussion told ESPN. So not that different from what Ken Rosenthal was reporting from The Athletic. You know, it's interesting because if you were one to watch the KBO, the Korean baseball organization, if you were one to watch that, it started on Monday night. I remember I was doing Lakers talk, and Funches is on the board in the studio, and you know, the conversation kind of starts coming on Twitter that this game is going to be on, it's going to be televised. But there is kind of more of a reality in the United States. And I want to say this quote, and this isn't, I'm not trying to, you know, discourage others or anything like that, but where Korea is, where that country is right now, South Korea, compared to where the United States is when it comes to COVID-19, when it comes to testing. I mean, it's great to hear Mason saying that he got tested. Ireland's going to go get tested tomorrow. I mean, I should set a date and go get tested myself. But it's great to hear that if you're in Los Angeles County right now, you're encouraged to go get tests, not like it was a month ago or it's been 7 weeks now, so everybody kind of knows what's played out. But I want to read this quote because I think this is important. Andrew Neumer, an associate professor of public health at the University of California, Irvine, told the Times, "If you include New York, it looks like a plateau. It looks like the plateau is moving down. If you exclude New York, it's a plateau slowly moving up." And the reason why I point that out, and Mace kind of highlighted as well, there's other states across the country where, yeah, that number is kind of slowly creeping up. That number is slowly going up. And it's not to say that all these leagues don't know that. It's not to say that all these leagues don't know that there's going to be an incredible amount of challenges that comes back to starting sports. But whatever the plans that are out there, they will all have to be adjusted on the fly. You know, John was mentioning Well, what happens if, God forbid, there's a player? It could be a big-time athlete or a player that's further down the roster. And we could be talking Major League Baseball. You could talk NBA. Really, the sport, it's irrelevant. It's just the concept of it, the idea. Well, what happens if one of those players at one point tests positive for COVID-19? Does the entire league stop again? You know, the example that I'm going to give is when we were talking about Rudy Gobert, the NBA stopped right there in that moment. The NBA completely stopped, and that started this ripple effect around sports. And I feel like not just around sports, the moment that happened, and I think none of us will ever forget that night where the NBA stopped, sports stopped, and really the country stopped as a whole. It was the same night that President Trump was stopping. He had a travel ban to Europe. So there was, you know, obviously a lot going on that specific night. But what does happen if a scenario like that plays out? Those are all fair questions. By the way, Tony Clark, head of MLB Players Union, was interviewed by ESPN's Marley Rivera. This was from a couple days ago, and I want to point it out because Major League Baseball is looking to have some type of a proposal that they could share with the MLB Players Association. So Tony Clark, who heads that up, despite all that has been floated and all the rhetoric that is out there, we have not received anything formal that details an actual plan. Unless or until we see and receive an actual proposal with a plan or plans, because my guess is there's going to need to be flexibility and whatever is going to be considered, it's all assumptions. It lends itself to the uncertainty because there's a lot of iterations, but any substance behind them just yet. So basically, in a nutshell, Tony Clark is saying that they have not, baseball has not, the Players Association has not received anything yet that would give them, you know, obviously an idea of what exactly the plan is. Now, that doesn't say by any stretch of the imagination that they don't already have all these plans in mind and they're just kind of their ideas that are just being thrown out there, but that gives you an idea from a players union perspective. We all know Scott Boras, the super agent. He was on GetUp, and Scott Boras represents a number of players across Major League Baseball, and this is his thoughts on how the players would feel about coming back.
Well, obviously the players I represent, you know, we've had conversations with well over, you know, 100 major leaguers, and you know, the athletes are they're understanding. They're, you know, we have given them a lot of information from the, you know, many of the physicians that treat them, the epidemiologists, virologists. The data is much more profound and exhibited today. And I think one thing we know is that this virus has a clear impact. It's not going away. It has a dramatic impact on those of higher ages and people with underlying medical conditions. And fortunately, the athletes of baseball, those parameters carry much, much less risk with this. We've looked at the hospitalization rates of people in this age group without underlying medical conditions. We've looked at the, you know, mortality rates, both in where they could play in spring training in those states. You know, one of the epidemiologists from UC Berkeley pointed out about being locally observant and appropriate as to how you wear and how you treat this virus. And certainly those in Florida and Arizona, and frankly, in many states now, the mortality rates are much lower than they are in the Northeast. So when you look at that and you look at the risk that are related to the players, I think they're much more comfortable now with returning. Also, the treatments that are available now are more defined, all the therapeutics, and also we're very hopeful about vaccines in the future.
All right, so there's some stuff there from Scott Boras, which, you know, makes you definitely think positive from a player perspective. But I'll say this too, when we come back, we could talk a little bit more about it. And there's a couple more pieces that I want to play from Scott Boras. I don't think it's just the players that, you know, you should be concerned about. It has much more to do with the managers. It has much more to do with those that are older. We talked about this a couple days ago. Greg Popovich is 71 years old. Mike D'Antoni is 68 years old. It's the coaches. It's the managers. It's the umpires. Of course the players are in tip-top shape. This is why they're getting paid their millions of dollars. This is their craft. This is what they're the best in the world. And obviously They're as healthy as they come, but there's a lot more that goes into it than just that. So when we come back, I want to hit on that a little bit. Scott Boras, a couple more. There's an idea about this isolation that he expands on as well with GetUp. We'll do that all coming up next. Stay right here. This is the Sliwa Show on 710 ESPN. All right. Appreciate you guys tuning in. We'll go till 9 o'clock. Quick reminder, 7 o'clock, Bill Oram. We'll talk some Los Angeles Lakers basketball. He's got his article right now. Kobe Bryant's Last Dance with the Lakers was not the script you want to write. Could be a documentary coming out. I'm going to ask him how much he knows about it. He got a chance to connect with Mitch Kupchak, obviously the former GM for the Los Angeles Lakers and the current GM of Charlotte, where Michael Jordan is. So we'll get into that. But before we went to break, I want to continue on this topic in regards to baseball. And I mentioned Scott Boras, who we just got a chance to hear from, on how the players feel about coming back. So he kind of gave his thoughts and opinion there. Listen, I don't know what all the obstacles are going to be for Major League Baseball and the NBA. I link these two together just because these are two sports that should be playing right now, and they're not. NFL is a different story. Yes, we have kind of kicked that can down the road, but the NFL is just doing things business as usual, because they should be doing things business as usual. And they've also done things to where someone like myself, who was critical, NFL, how are you going to do this? What do you mean a virtual NFL draft? What are you talking about? And all they've done is win all offseason. Tomorrow's going to be another win for them when they release that schedule. But for Major League Baseball and for players, one conversation that, you know, Scott Boras just mentioned, he feels good that the players coming back, and he talked about, you know, now that obviously the testing is becoming much more, there's a lot more tests out there. Now, there's still asymptomatic, that's like the key word there that everybody uses when it comes to somebody having COVID-19 and just not knowing it. And then they spread it around to others, and they have no idea that they're spreading it around. But one of the things I think Boras left out of his conversation was, it's not just about the players. I mean, we all know what the players, the tip-top shape that these guys are in. I'm very, very – I understand that specific players in the league, in Major League Baseball, who's more athletic and in shape than Cody Bellinger or Mike Trout or Clayton Kershaw, or, you know, I could go Mookie Betts. I can go down the list of these unbelievable athletes. Yeah, they probably are not going to be individuals where COVID-19 can have a, you know, a big time effect on their life. Maybe I'm wrong, by the way. But if they got it and they pass it on to somebody else, that's always been the fear when it comes to COVID-19. And then how about the managers? What's the average age of some of these managers in Major League Baseball? What's the average age of these umpires for Major League Baseball? That's going to be, I think, the biggest challenge, aside from the testing, aside of figuring out how to be able to put together these games, and whether it's a 10-team league that they're talking about or the Arizona bubble that I said earlier, Dr. Fauci was, yeah, maybe that can work, but it seems like that's the least favorite of all the plans that are proposed out there from baseball. Jeff Passan had mentioned, we're going to have an idea what Major League Baseball is proposing here very shortly. So, good article right now from Jeff Passan. Teams are telling players to get ready and get in shape. MLB is expected to send a return to play proposal to the union soon. The gears for baseball's return are starting to churn, but significant hurdles remain for it to become a reality. And you could click on his article, but Jeff Passan on Twitter, at Jeff Passan, will take you right to the article. One other thing I want to play from Scott Boras. Scott Boras is talking about the idea of isolation. He gives his thoughts. He was on with Mike Greenberg from GetUp.
Well, I think we have to set up models as we do in medicine, and that is you can certainly head to spring training. And I think players that I represent have all said they're willing to look at this for 30 days and be isolated and phase in spring training with, say, pitchers and catchers first. I think one of the things we have to consider, Mike, though, is that we need to do this. We need to have a little longer spring training because the players have been isolated. This is a very unique setting that they've been in for the last 50 days, and we need a little more conditioning time. We need more time before we get to the skill part of the game than we have in the past. So it's a very different process. But I think one thing that's clear is that we have involved the people. They're going to have doctors there. They're going to have their trainers there. The isolation aspect, I think the players are willing to do to really take every precaution as we test before they go, test when they arrive, and really create an environment that we can, after a 30-day or so period, let everyone know that this group is healthy. We also have an international community that we have to do well in advance, because we have to bring them here and get a look at where they're at, and that may be additional time. We have to have isolation spaces for those who test positive, and we also have to have I think a period of time for those to integrate back in. So it's going to take a little bit more time, I think, than the norm to bring baseball back and get players ready. And then I think during that time, we can decide what the schedule can be, because as one thing we're learning about this, the more time we spend studying the virus and collecting the medical information, the more efficient of a schedule I think we can have. And we also have the month of October that we can use as a regular season now by the players' agreement. So I think we can put together something that can really help America.
All right, that was Scott Boras on GetUp. By the way, he did also, in that conversation with Mike Greenberg, he talked about how just having baseball back will bring everyone back. I get that. By the way, I get that concept. And Mace was mentioning, too, just in general, right? Having sports back and baseball being such a pastime and the history that baseball has. And baseball, Mace gave an example, during war, baseball was still being played. And it is one of those things that when baseball is in the background, whether you're a fan that doesn't miss a Dodger game, watches all 162 a year, or you're more of a casual fan, there is some type of a comfort level that comes with baseball. But I would, you know, also make the same argument. That's the same with NBA. You know, I think in this town, if we get that opportunity for NBA basketball and we're watching Anthony Davis and LeBron James and the Los Angeles Lakers, there's also an incredible amount of comfort that comes with that. You know, it's crazy. I don't know if I do this enough. I'll kind of try and paint a picture for you guys here. What an interesting time. Like, I don't think I just sit back, I take a deep breath, and I try and just kind of understand what's going on today. You know, I went for a walk earlier today. Actually, I'll even go before that. So every Wednesday, I do some volunteering at St. Francis Center, which is out in downtown LA. And I think I told this story a week ago, where when I walk into St. Francis, you have to first disinfect your shoes. So you actually, your shoes go into this kind of bucket. There's a carpet there. It disinfects your shoes. Somebody's there standing. They take your temperature. I don't know why I never ask what my temperature is. I think I asked one time, but I'm always curious, like, all right, how accurate is this thing? But they take your temperature. You already got your mask on. Then you go get some gloves. You put your gloves on, and then you get to work doing whatever you're doing. I've done that now, 4 weeks, 5 weeks in a row, where now that's the norm. Like, now that's not a big deal to me anymore. I get it. I understand it. I'm doing the show, obviously, from home right now. So doing the show from home, I do the show the way my place is set up. I got a beautiful view of Silver Lake right outside my window, and I see people kind of walking up and down. Everybody's got a mask on. Everybody has gloves on. You go to the grocery store, what does it look like? You read everything you read on news right now. Everything's about COVID-19. Think about 8 weeks ago, 2 months ago, what your life was to what our lives are today. What a trip that is. You know, what a trip that is to kind of think that this is the world that we're living in. And the craziest part of it all is we still have no idea how things come back. Like, I don't know when I'm going to be. The station's going to hit me up and say, all right, Al, let's do it. You're coming back now. Come to the office. We come back into the studio. What's that world going to look like? Funches was just mentioning on Monday. Curtis, you probably know this as well. Starbucks just opened downstairs. Is there anything else open in LA Live? So I think this sometimes, as much as we are just kind of going through the motions, man, to kind of take a step back and look at the current predicament, the current situation, and what is so weird, which would have been so foreign 2 months ago, is now our known. That's a trip. That's a trip to me, at least. And I'm sure people can relate with what I'm talking about. Okay, coming up next, Bill Orem, The Athletic. Kobe Bryant's last dance with the Lakers was not the script you want to write. This is going to be a great conversation, because I think with Bill, who has done a fantastic job for The Athletic for you know, obviously the time that he's been there, but covering the Lakers, this will be a great conversation because it doesn't just have to be the Last Dance documentary. It doesn't have to be just the Kobe and Jordan part. He had a chance to connect with Mitch Kupchak, so I'm excited to see how that conversation went. Appreciate you guys tuning in. Stay right here. This is the Sliwa Show on 710 ESPN.
GEICO knows there are many reasons why you ride. From the camaraderie of the other bikers, a band of brothers, always there for you, rain or shine, to the amazing savings you get with GEICO on your motorcycle insurance and accessories coverage all year round. But for Bucky Hornhill, it was one reason in particular.
It was my helmet hair. I was born with helmet hair. I've tried to cut it a bunch of times, even buzzing it, but it immediately just goes back to helmet hair.
GEICO Motorcycle. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more.
I appreciate you guys tuning in. Bill Orme from The Athletic. Kobe Bryant's last dance with the Lakers was not the script you want to write. Bill, thanks for joining the show, bud. How are you?
I'm doing well, Alan. How have you been doing over these last couple months?
Everything is good. It's, I think, good. In a weird way, we've kind of adjusted, right? You got no other choice to do so. But look, it's funny because I saw your article and immediately, and I don't know why, but immediately when I saw that you had a chance to connect with Mitch Kupchak, I thought that was so cool. Just because, look, being in Los Angeles and getting a chance to be around the Los Angeles Lakers, and by the way, a lot of that was just from a fan perspective for so long. We don't talk about Kupchak very often. Just in general, how was that conversation with him?
It was good, and obviously, you know, I covered Mitch for a lot of years, and so you know, a lot of what we talked about made its way into the story, but we had a chance just to connect on how he was doing in quarantine and kind of with the pandemic situation. And, you know, he had just gone for a long walk in Charlotte when we spoke, and, you know, it was just good to connect on a human level with somebody you don't get to see as much anymore. And, you know, for several years, he was a really important figure in, I mean, really, if you follow the Lakers or care about the Lakers in all of our lives, really, and less so now that he's running a team on the opposite coast that doesn't really cross paths with the Lakers very often, but still an interesting guy and a nice guy. It was good to connect with him.
Bill, can you tell us a little bit about your piece and just kind of the thought process there? Obviously, we're now getting a chance to see this documentary around Jordan and the Chicago Bulls. And we know what the ending is. The ending is in 1998, the Chicago Bulls are going to win 6 championships in 8 years.
Right.
For Kobe, that story was a lot different as far as his last dance.
Yeah, I mean, it was actually, you know, was watching The Last Dance and had kind of a flashback to Kobe's last year when you had this film crew that he'd hired trailing him everywhere he went, showing up to the practice facility and to games with Kobe, leaving with him. You know, kind of constantly this eye watching him. And I had wondered for a while what was going to happen with that footage, whether anything was in the works when Kobe died earlier this year. And so I was kind of kicking around a story on that. And then Baxter Holmes from ESPN actually obviously had a similar mind. He and I were both covering the Lakers that year, and he wrote a story for ESPN that was interesting about a lot of what was happening, you know, about the process of that film crew and kind of the logistics of it. And it was really interesting, and I was already kind of working on my story, and I wanted to kind of get into more of what that season was and what it would and what maybe that film would look like. And you're right, it was a season that couldn't have been more different from Kobe's last year, from Michael's last year, whereas Michael never really definitively answered whether or not he was done playing. You know, Kobe kind of gave in early on and acknowledged, yeah, I am, this is going to be it for me. And that set up this, as we all remember, pretty unprecedented farewell tour where he was being celebrated in every city, including a lot of cities where he had made a lot of enemies as a player. And you know, that's kind of the arc of this, you know, of whatever that footage, of whatever story that footage might tell. You have Kobe Bryant in year 20 fighting through injuries and pain and fatigue and playing on the worst Lakers team in history just to get to the finish line. But, you know, and one thing Mitch Kupchak talked a lot about was the triumph of that last game. And you know, I know there's a lot of people who are cynical about that last game. I get it. I share some parts of it, in terms of it not happening in the normal flow of a game where, you know, are those legitimate points and that he scored. And to me, the triumph is in what Kobe had been through over the previous 4 years and the fact that he started that game so slow and you could only think, oh my God, is he going to struggle in this game the way he did in his last game in Philly or in a game in Utah a couple weeks earlier? There was a night where I think he shot like 1 for 17 from three that season. So we knew that there were some nights he just didn't have it. And in that last game, you watch and think, is it possible that he's going to have one of those nights on his last night on the hardwood? And as we all know, that's not what happened. So to me, that was kind of what made that a special and kind of iconic night for him.
Bill Orme from The Athletic joining the Sliwa Show. Bill, when you look back at that last season, what was it just from a franchise perspective? Of course, everything was built on this is Kobe's final year. Like you said, Kobe deserved all those accolades when he walked into to different arenas. And they most definitely rooted for a player that at one point they probably booed, but that was the respect Kobe Bryant had at the end of his career. But some of the other players that were on the team, what was that final year like for them?
Yeah, and that's I think really an interesting part of this, a really interesting dynamic, because you had a lot of guys on that team who had grown up idolizing Kobe. And you know, Julius Randle's one. You know, D'Angelo Russell was a rookie on that team that year and was, you know, he was kind of the man. He was the new face of the franchise, theoretically. And yet, you know, here you had Kobe with a film crew, and he was the one who was getting all this attention and you know, everything throughout the year. There was a lot of strange dynamics. You know, these guys would go to practice, and they'd practice one thing, and then the games would start, and Kobe, who didn't practice, you know, after November that year, would suddenly be there, and everything would change. So nothing you practiced could really be implemented, really, because you weren't practicing with the guy who was going to take the bulk of the shots once games came around. You know, things like that that I think made it you know, kind of unbelievably unique. But I thought Mitch Kupchak, again, who I think, as you mentioned, you know, was just really had some really interesting thoughts on this subject. You know, said that he's talked to some of those young guys. He didn't say who recently, and that the thing that has struck him is that those players had an opportunity to get to see the celebrity of Kobe. Right? They got to see what Kobe sort of brought out in a crowd, or how he, you know, the brightest stars in Hollywood came out to see him on his last night. They got the celebrity, but they really didn't get the chance to compete with him in the way that, you know, players over the first 16, 17 years of Kobe's career did, where you're competing at an extremely high level, you're playing for championships, you know, championship or bust, you know, a year without a championship is a wasted year of his life, that sort of mentality. And what Mitch thought, and you know, and what gives him some comfort is that in that last game, they did get to experience that. They got to experience something, at least as close as you were going to get to that in that last year, in bringing them back from a 10-point deficit with 2 minutes to go, scoring 60 points. You know, it's just that's the sort of thing that, while Mitch, you know, the headline you read was from a Mitch Kupchak quote, you know, that's not the script you would write. You know, all the losing, playing with a bunch of young guys, not being physically able to go every night, the final game really was.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting too, Bill, because I remember that final season. Just, I think where I got from a Laker fan perspective, what I got most enjoyment from was when the Lakers were on the road. And you got to see, okay, in San Antonio, wow, look what they just did for Kobe. Or yep. In Miami, oh my gosh, how beautiful is that? There was that part of it. In Philadelphia, that was my curiosity, is when games were starting of what, how the fan base and how the organization would react for Kobe. But that final game, like you just mentioned, that was a tough year to watch, right? I mean, it was as bad as basketball as you can see, and it was such a weird dynamic of this absolute legend ending his career, but there's nothing else that makes sense, you know, within that team. I know you mentioned this to me probably about a month ago, maybe a little bit more than that. That was the greatest game that you've ever covered, so I know what that game meant to you. I want to jump back to The Last Dance real quick. Kobe's comments crediting Jordan for his advice had so much to do with those five NBA championships. Were you surprised to hear that? Did you know? And I've asked this question to many people since then, but did you know that these two were as close as they were?
No, and I don't think, you know, I don't think very many people did. And I think that was something that they, sort of guarded as sort of their private relationship. And it's interesting because you have two guys who, you know, don't have a lot that is private. These are two of the most visible and recognizable athletes in history. And the fact, and listen, we knew there was a relationship, right? It's not a secret that Kobe had deeply admired MJ. We knew that Kobe had asked Michael some questions during that All-Star game, that first All-Star game about his fadeaway. Like, Kobe talked about stuff like that during his last year. So you knew that there was sort of that on-court respect and that they had that dialogue. But in terms of it being, you know, to the degree that we learned after Kobe's death, with the words that Michael said at Kobe's memorial, you know, just a really beautiful eulogy. And then what Kobe said on The Last Dance, essentially echoing it, you know, Kobe described himself as, you know, a little brother, and MJ described himself as a big brother. And it just was it's surprising just in that they were able to keep it secret, that it was that kind of bond. And but it's also not surprising knowing the curiosity that Kobe had. And it makes even more sense now when you think about when he would be asked about what he was going to do for the young guys when he was, you know, when he, you know, young guys around the league, when he was on his way out, he kept saying, they have my number. They have my number. They can call me. And we know that he did take on that role, you know, obviously the Kobe camp last summer with a lot of the game's young stars. So Kobe was definitely paying it forward before his death.
Bill, I got one more question, just a quick plug real quick. So Bill Orme, The Athletic, Kobe Bryant's last dance with the Lakers was not the script you want to write. Great article. Go on The Athletic right now to have access to it. Bill, let's hypothetically speaking here, and I know there are so many hurdles between now and trying to figure out if the NBA is going to, you know, get that opportunity to finish off its season. So it's been 7 weeks since games were postponed. I think it's safe to say, I don't think anybody feels comfortable that it's going to be at least another 30 days, right? And I think that's me just being very. If you're looking at 3 months of no basketball, hypothetically, how much do you think it's going to be a challenge for these players? That's basically an off season, right? So to go through an off season and then boom, you're back, but you're not just back, you're back to some sort of playoffs. What type of challenge do you think that's going to be for a lot of these players to not just put together a good product, but to try and compete for a championship and still not put themselves in a position where there's the fear of injuries or anything like that?
Well, the challenge is immense, a few of the beat writers today were on a conference call with Frank Vogel, and he talked a lot about, you know, the need to try to get these, you know, end of season condition, but you also don't want to break them down because they haven't been putting their bodies through those tests over the previous 3-4 months, whatever it ends up being when we get there. And, you know, when you have a normal off season, you get a training camp that's a few weeks, you get 6 exhibition games, and then, listen, whether players like to admit it or not, then you have 82 games to get yourself into playoff shape. And the Lakers were well on their way. I mean, we obviously know what they had achieved the weekend before the season was suspended. They'd certainly asserted themselves as the favorites for the championship. And I don't know to what degree that kind of all comes back, right? Like, does the chemistry that you built over those 63 games just get paused and it's there when you come back after 3 or 4 months? Does the momentum, does the fact that you beat Milwaukee and the Clippers and maybe there's a little bit of a psychological edge there now, does that still hold true? You just don't know. Are there certain players who did a better job of staying in shape during the quarantine than others, so they come back better and they're able to get game ready sooner, whereas you might have others who are still working, playing their way into shape once you're playing games that matter? I think these are all the sorts of questions that we won't know until whatever it is over. And The Lakers, you know, have said all the right things. They obviously believe they're playing for something pretty big here, and so everyone knows what's at stake. But they're also humans. This is an exceptionally difficult time. It's easy to get bogged down. It's easy to eat entire packs of Oreos. Believe me, I know. So I don't know. I just think this is a really interesting, you know, experiment in terms of what athletes can handle, because no one's ever done this. No one's ever had the equivalent of an off season in the middle of the season. And, you know, when this resumes, I would expect the Lakers to still be championship favorites right there with the Bucks and Clippers. But there's so many variables of how this layoff could affect any one of the 30 teams that you don't know. I mean, I think there's also an increased chance of total chaos in a playoff after this. So you just don't know.
Bill, great stuff, man. Thank you for doing this. And again, great article in The Athletic. Thank you for joining the show, bud.
My pleasure, Alan. Thank you.
All right. That's Bill Orme right there from The Athletic. Okay. Let's go to break here real quick. I want to come back. Sham Sharania, got to read this tweet. And this has to do with some of the practice facilities. So I'll do that coming up next. Stay right here. This is the Sliwa Show on 710 ESPN. My man, the Slee Stack. All right. So tomorrow, just a quick reminder, the NFL is doing this small thing where they release their schedule and everybody's going to be interested. So that's going to be going on tomorrow. Mason Ireland, during their show, probably at 4:30, I think, is when the Rams are going to release their schedule. So we're going to have a great idea of – not a great idea. By the way, looking at their schedule, Jesus, they got some tough games. But great games. You know, you want those challenges. They're going to have Dallas. They're going to have – the division, by the way, is the best division in football. But – just keep that in mind. So tomorrow we'll have that special release of the schedule. We'll have that show, and Kirk Morrison and I will go 6:30 to 9 on that. So Shams, who you know, him and Woj do an unbelievable job in just putting out these tweets. So sources, NBA has informed its 30 teams that practice facilities can open May 8th if market is no longer subject to restrictions. Update. Total of 6 assistant coaches / player development personnel now able to supervise individual workout, no more than 4 at one time. He's talking about 4 players. He also had a tweet a little bit earlier, about an hour ago or so. Date the Lakers are targeting as of now to reopen practice facility under NBA's protocols, May 16th, sources tell the at Athletic NBA and at Stadium. This has been a conversation, and I don't want to kind of keep harping on it, but part of me does. The practice facility thing, do I think that the world is going to end if a team gets 10 more days or 8 more days or a week more time than the Los Angeles Lakers again at the practice facility? No, I don't think the world's going to end. I don't think that's going to be the difference between a championship and, you know, winning a championship or losing a championship. But I don't understand the reasoning behind not doing it all at the same time. I know every state is different, but every NBA team is the same. You know, that unison of doing everything at the same time, you typically have training camp. Just think of this. I'll just kind of give this as an example. When media day happens, typically in September, there's a difference between maybe a day or two between the teams of when teams have media day. But by that Monday or that Tuesday, training camp starts. So all the leagues or all the teams are on the same boat. They're going to get X amount of practices. They're going to get X amount of preseason games. They're going to get X amount of regular season games. All this is a prep for when you get to the NBA playoffs. And obviously, that's all that matters from there. Lakers are a perfect example of that. The training facility, this is the one that's thrown me off. It's thrown me off because you know, you have certain teams that have absolutely no power in this. So if the Lakers, let's say, lose 8 days when it comes to some teams being open to open, or maybe they lose 5 days, as in they're 5 days behind of other playoff teams, they get to use their training facility. just doesn't sound like a fair idea from the league. That's all I'm saying. I'm not saying that this will be the difference of winning a championship and losing the championship, but damn, it would also be nice that that everyone's on the same page, that every team has – they're all in the exact same position. It's not, you know, one team getting that facility 5, 6, 7, 8 days before another. So I would be saying the same thing, by the way, if the Lakers were under this position. If the Lakers had an extra week over another team, I would be like, does that make sense? How come the Lakers would have a little bit more time over other teams? So we've said this name a ton of times, and I'm going to keep it on the NBA front. Imagine how much the name Rudy Gobert has been thrown around over the last 2 months. And Rudy Gobert has just this, you know, footage that everybody looks back at now, knowing what we know, where he's with reporters and he's joking around and he's touching all their mics, and then he runs off into the locker room, where at that time you didn't think anything of it. Today, we're like, Rudy, what the hell were you doing? Utah Jazz Executive Vice President of Basketball Operations Dennis Lindsay expressed optimism about the continued partnership of franchise cornerstones Rudy Gobert and Donovan Mitchell. I want to read off a quote from Dennis Lindsay, and I have definitely a perspective and in a way a little bit sympathetic towards Rudy Gobert, but here's the quote real quick. They're ready to put this behind them. He's talking about Rudy Gobert and Donovan Mitchell. Move forward, act professionally. Look, the COVID-19 night of March 11th was really unprecedented. It brought a microscope to our team, and we get it. With that said, we're very pleased with the collective makeup of our group, Donovan and Rudy in particular. We look forward to moving forward. They've said their piece to each other. They've both visited at the ownership level and management level, at the coaches level, at the players level, with each other. I'll leave it at that. But I want to Gobert did say one thing, and this was back – this was probably a few weeks ago or so now. I think it was on April 12th, actually. We're both ready to go out there and try to win a championship for this team. I got to be honest. As careless, as stupid as Rudy Gobert was on March 11th, that night that completely stopped NBA basketball, stopped all sports, and in my opinion kind of stopped our country – I feel bad for Gobert. You know, I feel bad that he's going to kind of have this stigma behind him. And then that relationship with Donovan Mitchell, I don't know if it's better, by the way. I mean, we could just, if I'm president, if I'm a team president of the Utah Jazz, I'm saying the same thing. I'm trying to put these two together and try to see that, you know, two young players that have incredibly promising futures that you can continue to build around them. But I feel for Gobert. When I say I feel for Gobert and somebody says, Alan, what are you talking about? He was an idiot. Yeah, but we didn't really know what was going on. I mean, I could tell you right now, the night Lakers played Brooklyn, which was the Tuesday night, this was the night before the league paused. It was the night before the league got postponed. 100%, I'm not even thinking in my head, I definitely probably shook hands with people. And I did it just naturally. I mean, I wasn't doing it joking around. I wasn't doing it having it in my mind. Oh my gosh, I'm so concerned about this virus. Like, honestly, I didn't. And I don't think a lot of people did. You know how I know a lot of people weren't worried about it then? Because I know Staples Center had 19,000 people at Staples. I know that game between the Utah Jazz and the Oklahoma City Thunder, probably a sold-out game. I know there were games in the NBA all day Tuesday, all day Wednesday. How about that game on Wednesday? ESPN had a doubleheader. They canceled the game between the Utah Jazz and the Oklahoma City Thunder, but they were still trying to play the game between Sacramento and New Orleans. I mean, Gobert has got a lot of criticism for that moment, and I understand why he did. But I also feel bad for the guy because, you know, none of us knew what we know now, and certainly that's not something that he would do in this type of predicament or this type of situation under these circumstances. Okay. We got some NFL coming up. Kevin Schaefer, NFL writer for ESPN. How will the 2020 NFL offseason work? Answering big questions about virtual workouts, rookie camps, and more. I'll also kind of get his thoughts on how the NFL has handled things so far and what we could expect in the future. So all that is coming up next. Thank you for tuning in. Stay right here. This is the Sliwa Show on 710 ESPN.